Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy, and it's great to have you here with us. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, and you can follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at Golf News Net. Find all of our work on golfnewsnet.com. Download the GNN apps for your Roku and Amazon Fire devices. And we are presented by 2Under. 2Under are the purveyors of what we like to call asset management. They make some of the best performance underwear in the game, whether it's for working out, playing golf, nighttime comfort, daytime comfort, workplace comfort. They have a pair of underwear that will suit you. And they are the purveyors of the Joey pouch, which keeps your quote-unquote assets so very nicely dry throughout the course of a day and properly fit so you can walk with confidence and comfort. If you head over to their website right now, 2under.com, the number 2undr.com, you will get 20% off of anything that you order, including their new awesome loungewear, their performance t-shirts, which I felt at the PGA show are amazing, and their college apparel underwear, which if you have a rooting interest in any particular NCAA school, especially in the most popular ones, they've got a style for you. And the new herringbone underwear is, I never thought I would say that about underwear. But anyway, head over to 2under.com, number 2undr.com. Use the promo code GNN20, and you're going to save 20% off your entire purchase at 2under.com. What are you waiting for? Get in, try the underwear. I promise you, just buy one pair, even if you're skeptical, just buy one pair, try them, and I promise you, you will come back and buy three more pair with the promo code GNN20, because we are helping you save some big bucks on the best performance underwear out there and some of the best performance apparel, period, out there. Thanks to 2Under for being our sponsor. And also, head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. It's going to be our first ever GNN listener trip. We are heading to the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship in August. We're going to have a nice group. We have a great package available for less than $1,200. You're going to get 5 rounds of golf, 7 days accommodations. You get to play in the largest golf tournament in the world, the Myrtle Beach Am. It is so much fun to be there. You get to play on 4 different courses over the 4 days. You get a 5th round pre-tournament. You may get a 6th if you score well in your group, which is divided by age as well, handicap type. And you get to hang out with me and Mitch Lawrence. Mitch in his hometown will be at the world's largest 19th hole each and every night. You get to stay at the Sheraton, which is attached to the convention center where the world's largest 19th hole is. And then we're going to hit the town each night and do some fun stuff too. All under $1,200. It is an incredible value. We're also going to put up if you don't want to do the accommodations with us, you're still going to be able to get a $100 discount on your entry fee by heading over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. It's normally $625. You'll get it for $525, which I think is also a tremendous value, even if you just want to do things on your own on the accommodations front, want to bring your family down, hang out, do it that way. We can save you some money through that too. So head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. All right, so last week, we were at the PGA Merchandise Show, and I've gone to this show for probably 8 or 9 years now, and some years I've skipped for whatever reason, and over the last couple of years, last year, and then especially this year, a lot of the conversation turned away from media stories to some potential business development opportunities for Golf News Net. People are finally hearing about us, and are convinced that we're not a one-trick pony and that we're growing and we're going on a good trajectory, and that is so much in part thanks to you guys. So I cannot say thank you enough. But the one really interesting thing to me about the PGA Merchandise Show is the volume of people, the volume of golf. And if you've never been, and I talked to a number of people who are at the show for the first time this year, and it's always interesting to talk to them. Guys from No Lying Up were there for the first time. Some other folks I had meetings with, maybe with a destination or another product. Hey, we're here for the first time, or first time as an exhibitor. Maybe they came as just a person in the past, but didn't have a presence, an official presence. And it was just stunning to me, and it always is stunning to me, to hear people describe a 1 million square foot space, because you just don't understand how big golf really is until you get in that room and you realize how much stuff matters in golf. And that's just stuff you can sell. I mean, there's some travel components, some places you can go. And we met with some of those folks. But by and large, we're talking about apparel and clubs and balls and tees and stuff golf courses use, we're not even getting into the full breadth of the importance of golf to the federal or national or even international economy. It's a $60 to $70 billion industry, and you start to get a sense of that in that 1 million square feet. It is amazing space to be. There were a lot of cool products that I saw. We just put up a story on our website yesterday for everybody, not just GNM Plus subscribers. Although we're going that way, we're going to do more golf business. But the most interesting conversation I had at the PGA Merchandise Show was with a guy named Dick Sullivan. He's the CEO of PGA Tour Superstore. And we had a meeting scheduled. It was Thursday morning, and I'm walking in, and the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando is kind of this outdated place, but they have set up all of these different kind of pop-up conference rooms in the media center so people like me can meet with people like Dick who have a story to tell, and we need a quiet space to talk. And we just had such a fascinating conversation about the state of golf, and it honestly made me more optimistic. If you know me, and if you've listened to the show long enough, you know I'm pretty skeptical, and you know I'm cynical of why people do things. But the data that Dick Sullivan was giving me and the story he was telling about what he's able to do for PGA Tour Superstore and how they're looking to expand into some of the space vacated by that will soon be vacated by 182 closings of Toys R Us stores indicates to me that he is very high on golf retail, on the golf market. And I felt that way throughout the show. You know, there were years when I've been there. So I kind of got in the PGA Merchandise Show at basically the beginning or just right around the start of the Great Recession. And that mood was so dour. I mean, you could feel like people thought golf was going to die and no one was going to play golf in 10 years. Obviously, it didn't happen that way. A lot of people left the game. 6 million people left the game by some estimation. But I think they're starting to trickle back. Maybe not those same people, but new people. And you got a sense over the years that the first couple of years were, all right, this is horrible, we're all going to die, at least figuratively speaking, professionally speaking. And then there was, okay, we're still here. And then there were a couple of years where it was basically an attitude that golf was the problem. You know, the hack golf years where it's like, golf stinks, we're going to change it. And the resulting feedback was, I don't think that's right. And I don't think golf really needs to change that much. They need to change certain things that we've complained about forever: pace of play, cost, inclusiveness, who we market to, where we build courses, environmental sustainability, all of those things. Digital age, competing for attention span, how the family unit has changed, how people spend time with their families and children differently than they used to on the weekends. And yeah, those are all things that need to be changed or addressed in some way, but that doesn't mean you have to fundamentally upheave the sport to do that. And that's, I think, where we are now. I think the reality is set in that there has been and will continue to be a contraction in our sport. There's been especially a contraction on the number of golf courses, but as we've written about for years, we're still in a contraction mode. Even though you're adding new courses here and there, and those are great stories, but the contraction that's happening and still happening is really probably going to wrap up in, I'd say, 2022, 2023. So we've still got some years where we're going to have a substantially more club and course closings than openings. And then we'll probably get to parity around that time span where it's about the same. You know, no net loss, if not a little net gain. And I think you can feel a better energy about it on the retail side. You know, people that were in the business for the wrong reasons or had a bad product, they're either dying or they're dead or they're getting kicked out or they're changing their strategy or they've evolved. But all of those folks who haven't found a way to survive in the space are getting out. Just like the people who shouldn't have gotten in the first place as developers, the people who probably shouldn't have gotten in the first place with bad products or bad ideas or bad approaches are getting out. So my takeaway was kind of a positive one. I mean, I'm very tired at the end of a few days and obviously didn't get to really do much in the way of content. But I walked away from most conversations feeling really positive. Now everyone has a positive spin. It's a trade show. There are not many people who are absolutely blunt about the state of their business. And there's always room to improve. But I felt like there was a genuine optimism about what could be moving forward. And maybe after a long turn down, there could be a start to a U-turn up. And I don't mean rocket ship up. I don't mean anything like that. Golf runs parallel to the American economy. Its health does. So when the American economy crashes, so does golf. When the American economy turns around, golf usually lags, but it happens. And we're at a point in our economic development cycle that we've had a basically steady growth, maybe not a lot of growth, but steady growth for 8 years now, 9 years, I mean, really. So we're about to approach a 10th year of forward momentum. Again, small forward momentum, incremental progress, a lot of reasons for that. But I think we're starting to see that in golf. And I think you're starting to feel people have more confidence in their wallet, and that means they have more confidence to spend what's in their wallet. And that might mean playing golf. And we have gotten a little bit hipper to appealing to families at a private and public level. We have more options available in terms of equipment, especially for children, to get people interested in the game. Hopefully, with things like the longleaf tee system and modern course architecture, we create a welcoming environment for all people to play the game. And then ultimately, they become golfers. And maybe we get some of those people who go to Topgolf to get drunk on Friday, and they come out on Sundays or Saturdays, or they come out after work for nine, or whatever that is. But I felt really positive walking away from the show. That said, I still think there are a lot of things that are wrong with the PGA show. And I don't mean that the folks at Reed Expo do a bad job. I think they do the best that they can with a massive show, with a long-term contract locked into the Orange County Convention Center. They have a lot of years left to present this show in person. But the problem is, from a media perspective, and I'm sure if we had people big and small who are exhibitors, they would have their own set of gripes, but obviously I'm speaking from a selfish perspective. The problem with the PGA merchandise show is that so much of this stuff, especially the headline-making stuff, the stuff that you're interested in, that you're aware of, it's already announced, most of it, by the time we get there. If not, I've seen it, hit it, and maybe even done a review on it. I've played golf with it in a lot of cases. And that kind of takes away some of the reason to have this show, the reason to have this trade show, which really is centered around retail. Now, there's something this week called the Golf Industry Show, which is much more technical, it's more insular, it's not really meant to be public-facing. That show makes sense for a whole different set of reasons. But this being a retail-facing show and an effort to get media to come down and talk about new wares and new products and get a sense of trends in the retail portion of the industry, I don't think it works. I save for the occasional product that I see or the innovator that I see that I haven't heard of yet, most of the stuff I walk just right past, like, saw it, looks great. I mean, great booth, thank you. You know, it's awesome that you're here. But the prices that these people are paying for a relatively small space for 3 days is staggering. I mean, you're basically in for $10,000 no matter what if you want some kind of square footage on the show floor. And you can have rooms outside the show floor. Wilson does that with success. There are others who do that too with success. And I guess my concern is, if you're a small innovator, if you're a small startup, you're just getting involved in golf, which is hard enough as it is, by the way, and I mean that from personal experience and from what I've observed over the years, you're asking people to pony up what could be a production run, you know, $10,000 or more, to be able to just show up and hope you catch a big fish or hope you are so well received that you get enough in orders and expansion that you can buoy the company and that you can move forward. I don't think that's the right approach. And I understand that there are people from clubs, there are people from golf courses that come down, they write their orders, but frankly, everyone's got a rep right now, and if you're looking for something different, there's a thing called the internet, and you can find all that. I mean, you could effectively run the PGA merchandise show virtually. You could have a PGA show week on all these companies' websites, you could take virtual meetings, you could run the whole thing that way, and you could do it really efficiently. And I actually, part of me, the entrepreneurial part of me wants to do that. But from a media perspective, again, there's not much new. And this is really an opportunity for a lot of PR folks to earn their money for the year. Where they go, I just set you up with 20 or 30 or 40 meetings this week with media members. and they're going to cover you, and it's going to be great. And more often than not, it doesn't lead to anything, because it's up to us to make that editorial decision. But they can say, oh, well, you got a clipping in this, and you got a clipping there, and you got a mention here, and you know, round up left and right. And they go, oh, great, you know, that's awesome. And the rest of you, there's nothing. There's just nothing. And I talked to a number of people who are exhibitors and I'm friends with them, have developed personal relationships with them over the years. And all of them kind of have that level of skepticism. Like, well, I mean, media are great, but who cares? And from my perspective, and that's not to demean the media, but the other part of it is the level of access that you have is great because it's so many people in one place. Every CEO of every major golf company pretty much is there. And every important figure underneath them is there. The creators of these products are there. But from my personal perspective, I am there up to 8 hours a day, you know, basically 9 to 5, because that's when the show closes each day, about 6. But, you know, you're there each day from about 9 to 5, and you're just running from meeting to meeting. So you're on a 1 million square foot plane, and you're trying to get from one place to another. So at most, you can take 5 meaningful meetings in a day, which means at most you're going to get 10 stories. And a lot of the time you're just going to get a bunch of talk, speak, corporate speak. You're not going to get anything meaningful. So you can't just run with a story from there. So you got to do the follow-up. And you know, for me, I'm taking meetings, some with the purpose of meeting people for the first time, some with the purpose of doing a piece, most with the purpose of saying thank you to people who have advertised with us or have worked with us or want to work with us. Trying to figure out details around philosophy of a potential future deal. All that stuff comes up. So I had probably 2 hours worth of meaningful content time, and the rest was all just meetings. And I know there are other people in this space, in the media space, who would tell you that's what they do at the show now. Well, if that's the case, why are we going? You know, in the media component, because a lot of the folks who go there who are claimed to be media are local radio hosts, who don't have much of an audience, or but they have one, and so I'm using it means something for them. Or they're folks who are have been in golf forever but don't have a constant gig, so maybe they're freelancing. It just doesn't feel like an important event when you have so many people who are there who don't have a regular gig, I guess. And there aren't enough entrepreneurial media people to just start up their own thing. So who the hell's going? And you just go and you get... Yeah, you know, people going the media side of things and otherwise, just get free crap, play free golf on someone else's dime and walk home. That's a waste of my time. That's a waste of someone else's time. So I had originally thought about going for just Wednesday, and just the way things worked out, went for Wednesday and Thursday and went home. Next year, I'm probably just going to do Wednesday and go home because that's not what I want to do with my time. If I want good content, I'll reach out. If I want a meeting, I'll fly or drive to where I need to go. I can fly out to San Diego or Carlsbad or into Phoenix or wherever you need to be to meet with these clusters of people at OEMs and other places. Go to Chicago. There are a bunch of golf companies in Chicago. So I think that's probably what we're going to wind up doing. So that's why we didn't do much coverage. I didn't post anything for 3 days, and this is kind of how I felt about it. But what I would say is, and there are lots of people who ask, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, emails, what did you see that was so interesting at the PGA show this year? And what I would like to be able to, for people to turn that into is, if you're interested in what's going on at the PGA show, demo day, which is Tuesday, before the formal beginning of the show, should be open to you. You should be able to go. It's a 1 mile long or circular driving range where you can hit pretty much everything on the planet. How cool is that? I think it's great. I think there should be more of that. I think that's honestly what the PGA show should be. It should be a consumer-facing affair where you can buy tickets and go hit the crap out of equipment for 3 days. It's like a Woodstock for golf equipment geeks. It would be so cool, and they would probably make so much money doing it. And not only that, but also the equipment companies can make some money back selling direct, which they're doing so much of that online now. And you would have tens of thousands of people who would want to come. And you could charge them $200 just to come. You wouldn't even need the convention center. I mean, you can do that somewhere else. You can have the meetings and the ordering and showing off and stuff. You don't need the booths, really. I mean, you just need space to show people. could do it so much more effectively. And then people like you who might be interested in all the stuff that we get to see, but don't necessarily have the time or energy to show you all of it, you could do it. You can see what you want. I think that would be I think that's the way to do it. And I would do it in Orlando, and I would do it in Vegas. And I would do it at the same time. I would have a industry show component to it in one of those locations, but the others are consumer only. You find this huge space, you go hit golf clubs, have a great time. I think that's the coolest thing in the world. I love hitting new equipment. That doesn't mean I love doing everything related to new equipment all the time, but I love hitting new stuff. And if that means for a consumer getting the chance to see everything in one place, getting to take in this golf world, this spectacle, I think it would be really successful. I would love to hear what you think about that, because maybe I'm totally wrong, but I would love to hear about it. Talk to me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, email ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. All right, it's time to tell you again about our friends at Health IQ. Health IQ is an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like yourself, golfers that walk, you better be walking, runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegetarians, vegans, basically people who care about what goes in their body and how they treat it, get lower rates on life insurance. If you go to healthiq.com/19, you can find out if you qualify. But before you do that, try to understand a little bit more about why Health IQ could save you big, between 4 and 33% on life insurance rates, which is a discount somewhere in that range that 56% of their customers get. It is very similar to saving money on car insurance. When you're a good driver, few tickets or no tickets, no accidents, you get a lower rate because you're a safer driver. The older you get, lower the rates because you're less likely to have an accident. Same thing that Health IQ does for you, saving money on life insurance. If you take care of yourself, you go to the gym, you're part of an association, you can demonstrate you have a good healthy diet, you belong to a gym. If you show off all those things, those are the types of things that life insurers love to see. Speaking from personal experience and past life, they love to see those things. That means if you are health conscious, then that means you have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. That makes you easier to insure. That means you can get better rates and higher terms, higher money per term, and longer terms at better rates. And that's just a great benefit to have, as a good term life insurance product is so important to have. It provides ultimate security, and it's relatively inexpensive. And by going through Health IQ, you can turn maybe a $200,000 policy into a $400,000 policy for the same amount of money, because you are somebody who lives a health-conscious lifestyle. So again, head over to healthiq.com/19. 70% of Health IQ clients get rates approved of the top rate class through great insurers like John Hancock and others. And if you take advantage of this opportunity, I promise you will not regret it. They have $5 billion in coverage, so they know what they're doing over there at Health IQ. Again, healthiq.com/19 to find out more and see if you qualify. All right, let's get into the final portion of this show that I feel like we've just got to talk about, and I know it's a few days old at this point, and we are not going to talk about 16 at TPC Scottsdale. It's a great hole. It's fun. We should not be debating something that's been fun and vibrant for 25 years in golf, yet we do it every year, and it's asinine. So we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about J.B. Holmes, because I feel like we are not doing that. We're not addressing this correctly as a sport. So on Sunday at the Farmers Insurance Open, J.B. Holmes is in the final group. He has been in contention all day. He is on the par 5 18th at Torrey South. He has about 250 yards, somewhere in there, to the hole. It's a tucked hole location just over the water hazard, which is really dumb, but they have it, guarding the front of the green on the left side of that hole. He has to choose to – he needs an eagle. He needs an eagle to get into a playoff. Now, never mind that Alex Noren, who hits next, has a chance to win if he makes birdie. But at a minimum, J.B. Holmes needs eagle. So Ryan Palmer is the third guy in the group, hits. And by that point, Holmes has not yet selected a club. He's still talking with his caddy. And they speak for 4 minutes, until J.B. Holmes pulls a club and ultimately chooses to lay up. Now, I don't care that he laid up. That doesn't mean anything to me. If he feels his best opportunity to make eagles to lay up and try to hole a wedge, as incomprehensible that seems to you and me, because there's no chance of that happening. For a professional, that is believable because they've done it. And they've done it plenty of times enough to believe that they could do it on demand in this situation. However backwards that might seem to us, Phil Mickelson had Bones tend the flag on that very hole a handful of years back because he needed Eagle and thought maybe if Bones tended the flag, he could give himself a better chance to make the shot. And I'll be darned if he almost didn't do it. So that's fine that J.B. Holmes laid up. But he took 4 minutes to read the wind, settle on when he wanted to swing, and basically probably iced Alex Noren in the process. Noren then goes long, takes a drop. It's a free drop. Tries to get up and down. Had a birdie putt to win the tournament and didn't win the playoff either. Jason Day won that. So there's a very realistic possibility that by J.B. Holmes wasting 4 minutes on hitting a shot, he iced Alex Noren or put him in a position where he could have hit in a more favorable wind condition for him and he could have gotten to the green and the tournament would have been over and we wouldn't have had to go to Monday and Jason Day wouldn't have won. And after the fact, Holmes spoke with Golf Channel. Ryan Lavner talked to him and he basically said, well, I was still trying to win the tournament. So that's why I did all that. Well, you don't need to take 4 minutes and 10 seconds as Frank Nabilo timed it to figure out whether you're going to hit a shot or not. I mean, if you know you're not going to make it because of the swirling wind, you can determine that in 40 seconds. You can determine that in less than a minute, surely, and decide to lay up. Okay, well, we're just going to play for the next one. Too many variables here. I don't feel confident. Even if I wait, it might not work. Boom, that's 5 seconds. Hit the shot, lay up. Let's try to hold out. And if we can, great, we're going to the playoff if Alex Noren doesn't birdie. And so a couple days later, Tim Rosenfork gets a hold of Holmes and says, you know, I wasn't trying to ice anybody. I was just in the moment. I'm trying to do the right thing and trying to win the tournament. And again, that's fine. I understand you're trying to win the tournament. But under the PGA Tour regulations, which I am looking at right now, hear the paper. Under the PGA Tour regulations, under their player handbook, when players are timed, now this group wasn't timed, but under normal circumstances when players are timed, they are typically afforded 40 seconds to hit a shot. If they're the first to hit a shot, basically tee shot on a par 3, tee shot any hole, second shot on a par 4 or 5, and a third shot on a par 5, first around the green, first to putt, you get an extra 20 seconds. So anywhere from between, you either get 40 seconds or 60 seconds to hit a shot if you're being timed. Obviously they weren't being timed, but you're telling me that it's okay for J.B. Holmes to take an extra 3 minutes and 30 seconds to figure out whether or not he should lay up. I can't be okay with that. And compounding my frustration were two people. First, it was Justin Thomas who came out and said, I'm totally with J.B. Holmes in that situation because the golf tournament's on the line. It's the last hole. The last hole in a golf tournament is no less important or no more important than the other 71 holes before it. So you can't tell me that the last hole is different. It's not. Statistically, it is not. It is the same. So if you're expected to behave a certain way on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and the front nine on Sunday, then you should be expected to behave the same way on the back nine on Sunday. Play. Hit the ball. Let's go. Let's move it. And you could tell TB was getting frustrated. I mean, Nick Faldo and Jim Nantz were frustrated. I'm sure CBS was screaming into a pillow because they wanted to get to the red carpet coverage of the Grammys, which, I mean, how many people were watching golf care about the Grammys? I don't know. But still, people who showed up at around 6:50 who wanted to watch the start of Grammy red carpet, like, golf! Eh. And the ratings were horrible, probably in part because no one wanted to watch J.B. Holmes stand around like a jackass. And then you had to go over to Golf Channel to continue the playoff, which they benefited from, but you had to go there because you couldn't continue showing it because they ran out of time. They had to go to the Grammys. And then you've got PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, who's like, oh, he's just in the heat of the moment. So he said, heat of the moment. Well, excuse me, but it doesn't matter whether it's the first hole, 38th hole, or 72nd hole. The rules of golf say you're not supposed to take undue delay to play a shot. Now, they don't say in the USGA and R&A rules of golf how much time you have to hit a shot, but your handbook at the PGA Tour says you have 40 seconds or 60 seconds to hit a shot under normal circumstances and when you're being timed. So, how is 4 minutes and 10 seconds okay? And that response tells me that Monahan in particular doesn't really care about improving the pace of play on the PGA Tour, which can be atrocious. That final round was almost 6 hours for that final group. That is horrendous. That is awful, terrible, terrible. That should never happen under any circumstances. And I understand they may not be the only culprit, although J.B. Holmes slows down precipitously as he gets in contention deep into a tournament. But there are also plenty of players who treat the first to 72nd holes the same, and they're slow on every hole. And there's been no indication from the PGA Tour that they're willing to change that. They're willing to put pressure on their players to go quicker, while every sport, literally every sport, is trying to find a way to go faster. Major League Baseball is pursuing a shot clock. They're pursuing these weird situations where in extra innings, there might be a runner on second base to start the inning to speed up the scoring. Then you've got the NBA, which is trying to improve its timeout rules and create situations instead where like the last minute doesn't take 30 minutes. You've got the NFL, which is trying to tidy up the commercial breaks and the number of them that happen between possessions and the length that they are, and having commercials run while you still see what's going on in game action. They're changing reviews. They're constantly looking at it, try to shorten the game. And golf just goes, eh, we're fine. It doesn't matter. It's great. That's in the face of what society cares about right now. And I know that there are probably plenty of you out there like, yeah, it's the last hole. What do I care? You know, but at 4 minutes, that's too long. I will even concede to you 2 minutes is fine. I can live with 2 minutes when it's a really important situation. But 4 minutes is just too much. And I feel like the attitude of the PGA Tour is completely different than that of the European Tour. Keith Pelley, who's their CEO, took the Austrian Open this year, which was without a sponsor, so he had this opportunity, and is turning it into basically a tour-funded event to experiment playing with a shot clock on every hole. And if you don't hit within the shot clock, you get a stroke penalty. They're going to see how it works. They're going to see if rounds improve, what it means. They're going to do a real-life study, see how it works. Just like the PGA Tour tried to do last year in allowing caddies and players to use distance measuring devices at select events on the web.com tour. And I don't know what the results of that study were. Haven't heard a word about that yet. But they seem to indicate they were going to try and speed things up, but they're not willing to go the length of creating a shot clock. And my view is you should be able to look to poker. Matt Savage is a buddy of mine. He's the executive director of the World Poker Tour. Those guys in poker always worry about stalling around the money bubble. So at a certain point in the poker tournament, there's what's called the money bubble, where the difference between making money or not making money. And players often slow down and go, quote, go into the tank for decisions at that point in the tournament, because if they wait long enough, they might get lucky and someone else busts before them, and then they make money. Then all of a sudden, the action speeds up again. And so Matt Savage was like, this is dumb. We can't have all this waiting. I'm going to create an action clock. So he's worked with a company that specializes in this. They've developed a product. You basically get 30 seconds to make a decision when it's on you. You know, you call, you raise, you fold. But that's it. You do it. And you get a couple of time chips over the course of the event. And you can use those for an extra 30 seconds. And if you don't, again, you don't use or make your decision in the time that you have available to you, 30 or 60 seconds, then your hand is dead. It's folded. You're done. The decision is made for you. I think that's great. I think we can do the same thing in golf. We can say, okay, using the PGA Tour parameters, you have 60 seconds to be the first to hit a shot in the hole. You have 40 seconds to be the next. And if you don't do that, okay, you just took a stroke. Now hit. Do you think that would mean something to these guys? Yeah, you're damn right it would. And I would take it a step further. I would say, okay, you took 22 seconds on this hole or on this shot. You saved 18 seconds. So that goes into your bank. You can save that 18 seconds for later. So if you get into a sticky situation, maybe you need to think about something, take a little while to figure something out, you can run that extra time off. And you don't have to worry about getting that stroke penalty. So if you are someone like J.B. Holmes who plays relatively normal pace on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, but on Sunday slows to a crawl, okay, well, maybe he has enough time banked up that he can take 4 minutes and 10 seconds on a shot. But at least I would know under the rules, he's got that availability. And you go, all right, well, this is taking forever, but he does have it available to him. And maybe you create a cap. Maybe you say, okay, you can only spend as much as 3 minutes on a shot or 2 minutes on a shot, but you can use your time bank for that. I'd be more willing to go that route. create a cap as well, so as to say how much time you can use. And that time you can bank, you can use throughout the tournament. So if you saved a whole ton of time by playing quickly on Thursday or Friday or Saturday, you could waste it all on Sunday. That would be your right. I think that would be the way to go. But I don't see that coming from the PGA Tour, especially after the commissioner comes out and says, oh, it's fine, heat of the moment. That's so disappointing to me. I'm someone who hates to waste time playing golf. I love playing golf as an activity. I love playing golf for physical fitness, whatever component that there is, or whatever is undone by drinking beer. But I also love it for hanging out with friends. But that doesn't mean I just want to lollygag for 5 hours. I want to be done in 3.5 and drinking beer at 3:35. So if that's the example that I want to follow, I think that's what a lot of people want to see. They want to see their sports sped up. Then, and not unnecessarily so or unnaturally so, but just to get a little bit quicker. Pick up the pace a little bit. I know there's a lot of money on the line. I get it. But that J.B. Holmes' shot was not going to get any better or any easier if he waited 10 minutes. Just wasn't. So why? Why did he get the chance to do that? And I think from a fan perspective, so many people react like, oh my God, just hit the ball. You're turning off people. And by basically defending what he did, you're turning off more people. It's a shame. I don't think that should be the case. I think you have to try to cater to fans. To some extent, you have to respect the natural flow of the game. But I think most PGA Tour players, especially the non-slow ones, would say, we should play faster. Just a thought. All right, next week on the show, we'll talk about the Phoenix Open a little bit, try to have a guest for you. We're working on that. We have a couple of different people we're lining up in the next couple of weeks, some friends, some guests, some new friends. We have some exciting stuff to tell you about in the coming weeks, too, with Secret Golf. Really excited to tell you about that. Some really cool things coming in 2018 with them through us with them. So I'm very excited about that, shaking my leg about it as I'm talking about it. Again, get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Follow us on your favorite social media service at Golf News Net. And if you have anything you want to hear about the show, want to know about the show, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Always available, always happy to get your emails. And give us a 5-star review if you listen to us on iTunes. It helps us reach more people. All right, that'll do it for us this week on the show. I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.